One of the strangest and one of the most mysterious people I have ever met was a preacher. This was about 4 years ago. He and I were fellow participants on a lecture program in Colorado. And it turned out that we were staying in the same hotel. We had a chance to talk a little bit during the day, and after it looked like a day of lectures was about wrapped up, he said, "I'll tell you what." He said, "Let's meet a little later in the evening, maybe about supper time, down there in the hotel lobby." Okay. So we met up. He wanted to go to a fairly dark part of the hotel restaurant. We did. And during our time together, we talked about a wide range of topics. Before that evening finished, he revealed to me that he was a magician. Well, I was a little curious whether or not that was actually true, so I said, "I'd like to see some magic tricks." And he obliged. He showed me a number of interesting tricks and did not disappoint. Finished up in Colorado, came back home, and I tried to continue contact with that man on multiple occasions, but he had no interest in that. He apparently is someone, or it wasn't just me, he apparently is someone who likes company for just one night or one day. And then after he has the chance to visit you for a little while, he sort of, I guess, puts you on the shelf. And you are someone that he has a memory of, and that's it. When it comes to people, we encounter some people, some individuals who seem to be so understandable. They are like an open book. And then there are some other people you meet, and you're puzzled by them. They're a mysterious person. Maybe as you think about them month after month or year after year, and you interact with them, you're always left with some questions, and you think, "I just can't really put my finger on that person. This person is a little bit of a mystery to me." Tonight, we want to begin a series of lessons because of where we are in the book of Exodus, a series of lessons that deal with God and our knowledge of Him. Should God be like that preacher? Someone who is mysterious to us, someone who is maybe intriguing, but someone who's always mysterious? Or should God be someone who is sort of in the open book category? Well, the answer to that question is found in the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 24. It is in that Old Testament verse that God spoke about knowing Him. Now, that's an important text because God made it clear many years ago that it is possible to know Him. If you were to look at that verse, Jeremiah 9:24, God also says, if you want to boast, if you want to brag, if you want to tell your friends that you really know something, then you tell them that you know Me. Now, I find that to be an interesting point for a couple of reasons. Number one, God says that it's impossible to know Him. It's possible to know Him. And then number two, that is a significant thing. So, for the foreseeable future, we want to see if we can come to a better understanding of God. Who is God? What is God like? What are some of the qualities that God has that we can understand at our level? What kinds of illustrations are used to describe the God of the Bible? As I said, the basis for this is Exodus chapter 19. God told His people that He was going to come down, figuratively speaking, and meet them on Mount Sinai. We know from what we've studied thus far that that was a frightening experience for the Hebrews. There was smoke, lightning, thunder, and God's people were terrified. Now, we live several years beyond that, obviously, and maybe as we are a Christian, we think that we know a lot about God, and maybe that's true. But likely there are at least a few points about God that are new to us. Some things, perhaps, that we've never considered. For example, I want to begin tonight with two passages. Two passages that you may not have studied, or maybe as you read them, they haven't really dawned on you as far as their significance. And I offer these two passages initially because they offer what I would refer to as shocking descriptions of God. You may not have ever thought that there are shocking descriptions of God in the Bible, but there are at least two. And tonight I want to share these two with you. One comes from the book of Zephaniah, chapter 3, that's where we begin. And the other one is going to come from the book of Psalms, Psalm 78. Now the Psalm 78 passage is so unusual, so shocking, that unless you could see this passage with your own eyes and consider it with your own mind, you might not believe that it's in the Bible. So I'm going to start with what I think is probably the least shocking, and that's going to be in the book of Zephaniah, Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 17. It is here, believe it or not, that God is described as a singer. If you have never considered, if you never thought about God as a singer, He is pictured in that way in the book of Zephaniah. Israel had the encounter with God back there in Exodus chapter 19, and I doubt that was the last thing on their mind. That they were thinking, "Oh, this God that's making the mountain quake, and we've got the smoke and the lightning and the thunder, this is the God who is compared to someone who sings songs." But many years later, this is what Zephaniah has to say. In that third chapter, almost at the end of the book, 3:17 says, "Jehovah thy God is in the midst of thee, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in His love. He will joy over thee, and then notice these words. He will joy over thee, how? With singing. That passage affirms that God sings. Now, we could discuss whether or not that language is literal. I don't think that that is necessarily literal, but it is a way of describing God. One of God's Old Testament prophets compared God to someone who sings. Now, as you think about that, your mind may go back to some statements that you have made or maybe others have made. Sometimes a person will say, we know that the angels rejoice when someone comes back to God, Luke chapter 15. That's true. I don't doubt that. And as we think about God, though, we find some other rejoicing in heaven, and that of course would come from deity. Zechariah 3:17, at least from our perspective, God's joy is so great he's pictured as singing. Now imagine, as we think about this in terms of this morning's lesson, imagine the joy. Imagine how God must feel in terms of singing when he sees his people studying his word. Can you think about young Samuel? Young Samuel here is God. He calls to the young man, Samuel. Samuel thinks it's Eli. He runs. He gets up. He's eagerly headed to Eli, and Eli says, I didn't call you. Can you imagine the joy, the thrill that God had in seeing the obedience of Samuel? Can we imagine the joy which comes to the heart of God when he sees a family on the first day of the week getting ready for worship? There may be a lot of things that happen in your household when it comes to Sunday worship. Maybe you're rushing about. Maybe you're thinking about breakfast. Maybe you're trying to figure out what clothes to wear, what's clean and what's dirty, and maybe it's a hectic day. But imagine the joy that God gets when he sees that family putting forth the efforts to ensure that they make it to worship. Contemplate the joy when people come together in a congregational setting, not just to worship God, but they come to worship him in spirit and truth. How that must thrill the heart of God. Angels rejoice when a person leaves sin. But what about God? Again, that singing image makes sense. As we turn to the second image, as I said, this is going to come from the book of Psalms, Psalm 78. The verse is going to be 65. It is a passage which, once again, if you've not carefully looked at it, you might think, well, there's no way that that verse could possibly be in the Bible. In Psalm 78, verse 65, God is compared to a drunken soldier. Now, you might think, what did you just say? God is compared to a drunken soldier, or we might say a drunken warrior. I'm going to read the text, and then after I read the text, I'm going to do a little explaining. He says, then the Lord, or God, awaked as one out of sleep, like a mighty man or a warrior or a soldier. God is like a mighty man that shouteth, and then notice these words, by reason of wine. Now we hopefully know, because we've studied the Bible, that God never sleeps. The psalmist hints at that in Psalm 78, verse 65, by using the word as. He describes God as, or like, God is similar to a person who wakes up. He uses that comparison to say, or to affirm, that for a time, God is not actively engaged in something. God is taking a hands-off approach for a little while. For a period of time, God has chosen not to interfere. But, even though God has chosen a hands-off approach for a certain amount of time, the writer pictures a time when God does decide to step forward and engage. When God begins to act, Psalm 78, verse 65, he is like, he is similar to, he is as, the writer says, a mighty man, like a soldier, like a warrior. So the psalmist makes that comparison, and that description is certainly not surprising. When we think about God, he is like a mighty man. He is like a warrior. He is like a soldier. But the mighty man in Psalm 78 and verse 65 is not just any type of warrior. God is compared to a soldier who shouts. He wakes up. He's ready to go. And not only does he shout, the text says he shouts, he is aroused, he's ready to go. Why? Because of the wine. That's a way of saying that this warrior that's being pictured, he's intoxicated, he's drunk. Now, I, and likely you, are not someone who is an expert on how people act when they become intoxicated. But we probably know enough to say with surety that when a person becomes intoxicated, he might pass out. That happens sometimes with people. But then there are other people. You might think of hardened Marines who perhaps have liberty. They're on leave for maybe a few days. They have a weekend off, or maybe they have a week off, and they're going to go in town. And they're going to do a lot of drinking. And as they do that drinking, they may become very vocal. And not only may they become very vocal, but decide that they're going to tear the place apart. And the MPs show up. The military police have to come and restrain them. And it is because of that alcohol that's in their system, and they just begin to swing and fight and punch, and they have a lot of energy. They're punching. They're punching hard. And as they punch hard, teeth are knocked out. Bones are broken. Because they're punching so swiftly and so forcefully, people go to hospitals. And if someone takes that smashing blow, perhaps from the soldier's hand, the Marine's hand, people fall to the ground. They stagger because they were struck in such a forceful way. God is, in Psalm 78 and verse 65, pictured as an intoxicated warrior to describe the strength that he has. Someone who is, when it's time to go after someone, he will be like the man who gets up and the man who is ready to go out and attack. That's the image of God. Causes his opponents to stagger and fall. From just two verses, Psalm 78:65 and Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 17, we get two very distinct, two almost contrasting images of God. And those two passages are helpful because once again, God tells us, Jeremiah 9, I want you to understand me. I want you to know me. I want you to have a comprehension of who I am. When you start looking at these verses, you step back and you say, who is the God of the Bible? Who is this one who created us? As we start opening up God's word and we begin to investigate what it says, this God that we seek to serve, he is described in all kinds of interesting and unique ways. For example, did you know the Bible sometimes compares God's work, and I emphasize that work, not God's nature, not his character, but compares some of God's work to that of a wife or a mother. If you were to flip back to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 18, it is there that God said his people had forgotten him. God is chastising his people. And as God makes the point, you have forgotten me, he says, in essence, I am the one who gave birth to you. What an unusual picture of God. The God of the Bible is not female in terms of sex, more described with male terminology than female, but as far as his work, as far as some of the things that he does, he is pictured as giving birth to the nation of Israel. And if that's not enough, a little bit later, as we think about the book of Isaiah, chapter 42 and verse 14, it is there that God pictures his work. He compares it to the love and the travail that a woman has in childbirth. A woman is putting forth efforts to bring that baby into the world. And God uses that image to describe some of his work. Now, maybe women can appreciate some of that imagery more than men can. But still, it's true that God uses this type of information in his word to help us understand who he is and some of the things that he's done. When we think about comforting a child, it's probably going to vary from family to family, but a lot of times if a child has been hurt, dad may be the one who is sought out, but generally what I see is the child goes to mom. Mom can make it better. In the Old Testament, if you want to flip, I'm not going to be reading too many passages tonight, but there is one more that I wanted to read, at least one more, and this comes also from the book of Isaiah. It's at the end of the book. It's Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 13. You have sometimes the apostles like Paul using similar imagery, but in the last chapter of Isaiah, in Isaiah 66 and verse 13, God once again, to help us understand who he is, what he's like, his qualities, his characteristics, he compares himself to a mother who tends to a child. He says, as one whom his mother comforts, so will I comfort you. God said, if you want to understand me, if you want to understand my work, then think about a mom. Think about the comfort. Think about the consolation. Think about the help that a woman gives to her offspring. God says, that will help you understand who I am, what I'm like. Once again, using female characteristics, things that we often associate with women. In the Bible, we sometimes have God pictured in some very tender ways, just like that singer text over there in Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 17. But then, in some other parts of the Bible, we sometimes have God pictured in some very forceful ways, like Psalm 78 and verse 65. Similar references to that Psalm 78 passage would be God says, you can see me as king. You can see me as lawgiver. You can see me as judge. You can see me as warrior. And then as we start looking at the Bible, trying to come up with an understanding of God, we find other images. Sometimes God is compared to light. Sometimes he is likened to fire. Sometimes he's compared to a rock. And then if that's not enough, God sometimes turns to the animal kingdom. And God almost looks at himself and says to us, if you want to understand who I am, look at some animals in your world. And as you look at these animals, you can see me reflected as far as some of my qualities, characteristics, attributes. In the book of Hosea chapter 11 and verse 10, God compares himself to a lion. Same book, Hosea 13 and verse 7, two chapters later, God there compares himself to a leopard. Back in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 32, 11 and 12, God compares himself to an eagle. Back in the book of Hosea, chapter 13, verse 8, God says, I'm like a bear. But not just a bear. He said, you imagine a mother bear that has been deprived of her cubs. A mom who has had her kids taken away in the animal kingdom. God says, that's what I'm like, at least in certain circumstances. And to use the analogy that Jesus gave in Matthew 23 and verse 37, you can also find it in the Old Testament. God is compared to a chicken that's willing to hide the chicks, or a hen rather, willing to hide the chicks under her wings. When we start looking at Scripture, we find that Satan is also sometimes described. For example, he's sometimes compared to creatures. The image of a dragon, the image of a lion. Both of those images are used to describe Satan. Sometimes characteristics and qualities are used to describe Satan. For instance, you think about Jesus describing Satan as a murderer. The Lord talked about Satan as a liar. So Satan experiences some of the things that God does. By comparison, there's almost nothing said about the devil. But when it comes to God, way after way, list after list, item after item, a lot of information is given. Information about God is given to us in so many forms. Remember Genesis 3:8? God is pictured, he's described, figuratively speaking, as walking in the garden. God is described as smelling sacrifices, Genesis 8 and verse 21. He is described as coming down and planting a garden, Genesis 2:8. There is a comment about God going down and taking a closer look, Genesis chapter 11 and verse 5. Not literal statements as far as going down and taking a closer look, but those are statements to help us understand in our terms, on our level, what God is like. It's been discussed many times by many preachers. But as we think about God, he's also someone who is described as having body parts. God is described as having arms, Deuteronomy 11 and verse 2. God is pictured as having hands, Psalm 111 verse 7. God is described as having a mouth, Deuteronomy 8, 3. God is said to have a voice, Deuteronomy 30, 20. Eyes, Psalm 34, 15. Ears, Psalm 5, verse 1. And even a face, Lamentations chapter 2 and verse 19. As we start looking at God and trying to understand who he is, we find that sometimes even emotions are associated with God. There is that regret that we read about in Genesis 6 and verse 6, or anger, Exodus 15 and verse 7. There's jealousy, Exodus 20 and verse 5, and even loathing in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 3. When we start looking at God and how he tries to reveal himself to us, we find that sometimes he's pictured as a shepherd, Psalm 23 and verse 1. Isaiah 64 and verse 8 compares him to a potter. God is identified as a builder, Psalm 102 verse 25. Psalm 80 verse 8 compares him to a farmer. Isaiah, in the first chapter, verses 24 through 26, compares God to someone who works with metal. Moses, in the book of Exodus 25 and verse 9, pictures him as a tent maker. And then, as we start investigating some of the passages, would you believe that God is compared to a weaver or a knitter? We see some women knit. There are some men who knit. But God, picturing him as a knitter, someone who's going to weave? Yes. Job 10, verses 10 to 12, and Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16. Isaiah 14 and verse 23 compares God to a house cleaner. You like to clean house? A lot of people don't like to clean house. But have you ever thought about God being pictured as a house cleaner? He is, in the Bible. And that image is given to describe how he operates. When we begin to study some of the characteristics, the attributes, the qualities, the work of God, really, if you are honest, you have to step back and say, God, who are you? Who are you? What are you? Oh, sure, I know that you're out there and you have all these great qualities, but really, who are you? And the best answer to that question was likely given by Jesus many years ago. I am that I am. I think that pretty well sums it up when you think about God. I am that I am. I've always been. And I have all these qualities. At least in this life, as far as I can tell, there is no simple summary for God. God is the timeless one who is perfect in all his ways. Yes, he has all power. Yes, he has full understanding. Yes, he is perfectly good. Some come along and say, oh, God is love. And they act as if that's the whole package. It's not. It's certainly a part of the package. But when we talk about God, there is much, much more. Way back when, had a lot of friends in high school. They were thinking about what they were going to do. Doctor, lawyer. Some guy wanted to open up his own plumbing shop. Different people wanted to do different things. And then there was Brad. I had no idea what I wanted to do. Not that I was lazy. There was just nothing out there in life that really appealed to me. So that's one of the reasons why I went into the military. But looking back on that time, perhaps at the appropriate time, God allowed me an opportunity to consider learning more about Him. And talking about Him, that became an option. And in my mind, at that time and even now, seeking God, trying to understand more and more and more about God, what could be better? What could be more interesting? What could be greater than that? And I think that's maybe what Paul had in mind. In Philippians chapter 3 and verse 10, he says these simple words, that I may know Him. Paul was a great man. Had great education. Had experienced many, many things. He'd been an apostle for a while. But Paul, in spite of all that he'd experienced, that I may know Him. It seems to me that Paul came to the understanding, he came to the realization that here is a chance to know God. And not only know Him, but to know Him fully. At least as much as possible in this life. There may be some subjects about which we are totally ignorant. I think that's probably true for most of us. But don't be ignorant about God. There's no reason to be ignorant about God. And in that same vein, don't be satisfied with a shallow understanding of God. That's what a lot of people have. They walk around, well, God's great, God is love, and God's good, and thank you for the food, amen. There's more to it than that. The God of the Bible wants us to know Him. And the God of the Bible says that it's possible to know Him. Study, pray, think, reflect, assemble with God's people, so you can also come to truly know God. If you make that choice in this life, your life will never be the same. I promise you that. Your life will never be the same. And you'll have a blessed eternity. Because you want to serve that God in this life. And you will, in eternity, want to continue to know and learn and understand about the God of the Bible. It's amazing that that God has an interest in each one of us. Whoever we are. Whatever our life is. However broken we might seem to be. God says, I love you. I want to have fellowship with you. I sent my Son to die for you. Who thinks like that? And that's what Paul talks about in the book of Romans. Who thinks about that? Who is going to send someone to die for their worst enemy? But that's what this God has done for us. Hopefully we'll learn some more about God in coming Sunday nights. Tonight, though, do we know enough about that God to say, I'm seeking to serve Him every single day? I believed in Him, His Son. I have changed my life, so I'm trying to conform it to His Word. I've confessed His Son. I've been buried with baptism so I can be joined to His Son, part of His church. And I want to learn more about Him to the best of my ability every single day. I'm seeking to walk in the light. If that does not describe us this evening, tonight we can get on the right road. And we'd like to help you do that as we stand and sing the selected song.